Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Band of Gamers podcast. This is episode 33, and I am Osiris Prime hosting this week. Greylock's got taking the week off. You know, he's been working hard, so he's gonna take some time off. But we do have our two other hosts this week. We have DBQ Hams. DB, how you doing? It's been a while.
It has been a while. So I live in Iowa, which means last week was the accumulation of Iowa caucuses, and now commercials have returned to normal about fast food and jewelry and car dealerships. So so that's where I was stuck in the midst of a big Iowa caucus, and which all really ends up meaning not a whole lot in the large scheme of things. But since this is a video game podcast, we're okay with talking about things that may not mean a whole lot in the large scheme of things. So thanks for having me back, Prime.
It's great to have you back. And actually, this is my third episode in a row. So we've kind of switched roles here. Usually I'm the one that's kind of in and out of the podcast. But now this is, like I said, my third podcast in a row. And once again, doing the hosting duties. And then we also have Zeus Adamus, which I believe he stepped away for a second, unless he says something. No, he's still away, so he'll join us here in a few minutes. So let's get going, let's get started, and we're going to start off with what we've been playing lately. DBQ, go ahead and start us off. I know it's been a while, but if you want to just kind of give us the highlights of what you've been playing lately.
Sure, yeah. I've been on the road traveling for work a lot, which means I've been packing along my Vita and my 3DS. On the 3DS, I've been chipping away at things like Super Smash Bros., but really I've been playing Super Smash Bros. With my kids, my sons. We picked up some more of the DLC and have continued to enjoy that, and it's been a fun kind of weekend winter extravaganza by playing a little bit, not a whole lot, but outside of that, just this past weekend through EA Access, I had played some Unravel, the Yarny game from EA. Really great art style. I haven't played enough to know if I really like it, and I also, in the 10-hour trial through EA Access, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to have enough of my fill of it to not really care afterward. And maybe that's just because it's a kind of indie puzzle game, which always makes me feel not as intelligent as the thousands of dollars of student loans and degrees that I have make me feel. So maybe that's why I'm shying away from it a little bit, but it's really creative. I love the art style. The puzzles seem pretty good right now. My wife and I actually sat down and watched some of it and played it. She watched and we kind of talked through the puzzles, and so that was a nice piece there. But there's this kind of narrative undertone that we're trying to figure out, and whether it's through the opening, which doesn't really give anything away. The opening starts with like an elderly woman, and you begin to kind of go into pictures. And so it's a question of, you know, is this about somebody's memory or about some type of lost childhood? Is there a stronger subtext to it all? So in that way, it's kind of neat. It's more than I expected. I thought it was just going to be this kind of cutesy, like, here's this little yarn toy that plays around in the backyard. So that may be enough to keep me kind of trying, but I've enjoyed it. I'm glad to have the trial through EA Access. I've also, you know, in terms of independent puzzle games, obviously there's been a lot of talk about The Witness from Jonathan Blow, but that is definitely one game where I'm okay with not playing and feeling stupid in the process. So, and other than that, the other week when I was out, I did get a chance to play through the Division beta. Prime, did you and Zeus or Gray talk about that at all?
No, we were going to wait until you came on to just to get your impressions. I didn't get a chance to play it, and I don't think the other Zeus or Gray did either. So we're just kind of waiting on you to see, you know, what the verdict is, so to speak.
Great. Well, I loved it. I really enjoyed it. It's a cover-based shooter, right? I mean, there's plenty of stuff out there on the internet, but I really, it was fun. It was a neat world. I will admit to having watched the half-hour Amazon Prime, The Division, Tom Clancy's The Division little short film, which basically works as like an introductory cutscene to kind of set up the situation and give you some characters to care about. Obviously, you're creating your own character in this, and so it's not the same characters. But again, it sets up some archetypes in terms of why people are fighting back against the virus and, you know, trying to protect innocence. So, you know, I think I mentioned this on the CAG site, that even that half-hour film for The Division made me care more about the world than the majority of the first year of Destiny, and that's a game that I sunk hundreds of hours into. But again, I mean, granted, saying that you care more about a world than Destiny's world after the first year isn't that high of a bar, considering the amount of work that was done on it, or lack thereof. But I really enjoyed it. I mean, the way the world is rendered and laid out, it's really fun to explore. I spent a lot of time in the, you know, the first night with it, just kind of trying to climb up any building I can and find nooks and crannies, and, you know, kind of wishing for, maybe wishing for a little bit of Assassin's Creed parkour movements, because it's a little clunkier. But it feels, I don't know, feels kind of Uncharted-y in terms of the, you know, the shooting, the climbing, the exploration pieces. I did get a chance. I played some Dark Zone for quite a while. You know, I finished the story missions. Like, there's not a whole lot of. But the Dark Zone, I ended up playing both in a squad of a four, and then rolling with a squad of just two people, and trying a little bit on my own. It ended up being really a lot of fun. On your own, it's not very engaging, not very fun. It's very tense in terms of, you know, picking up the gear and getting to an extraction point and hoping that you don't get ganged up on and slaughtered in the process. But running with a group, it became a whole lot of fun. You know, as I was running with a group of four, you know, we were covering each other's backs and kind of figuring out and taking out rogue agents in the process because we could coordinate. Ended up being kind of our own little police force. And then eventually, as everybody was, we got kind of bored with that, we started turning on each other for the sake of just seeing what would happen. And running with a group of just one other person in a pair, we did a lot of exploring in the Dark Zone and kind of coming into different, finding lots of different buildings that were housed a whole bunch of higher-end enemies, and trying one way to approach it and getting slaughtered, and coming back in and trying to find alternative entrance points to be able to flank them or come up high and snipe at them. And so it became, you know, there was all these little different little mini challenges in there. And then getting back to an extraction point and finding one maybe not close on the map, or finding one that didn't look to have a whole lot of traffic, and, you know, kind of sticking to the corners and sides of the map to stay protected. Yeah, it ended up being a whole lot of fun. I'm really glad I played. I like it a lot. If people who enjoy third-person cover-based shooters, people who enjoy kind of Diablo, or not, yeah, well, maybe Diablo, more so Borderlands, you know, that, again, that kind of loot aspect of shooting things and having numbers come off them, right? But this shouldn't come as that much of a surprise, considering in the last year I've talked a lot about Destiny, about Diablo, about Borderlands. So the fact that I enjoyed it shouldn't be a surprise. But if you like those types of games or have enjoyed them, or like a good cover-based shooter, you might find some enjoyment. It looks like there's going to be another public beta coming middle of February, which will give more people a chance. You know, there's definitely some bullet sponginess, but no more so than Uncharted. So if you don't mind that in Uncharted. I think you'll be okay here in The Division. Actually, I was hoping Gray was here to be able to kind of pitch that to him, because I know he's a big Uncharted guy, and the gunplay, it feels pretty close there. So I think the biggest concern, or the biggest question mark still, is like any beta, how much stuff do we actually get in the full game? How much is this going to be having a fall of multiplayer focus games, and Ubisoft coming off of Rainbow Six? Is there going to be a small single player piece that's going to be needed? You're going to need to have the season pass in order to get the most out of it. So we'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic. I would even say I am hesitantly excited that there's a whole lot of potential there, and I'm eager to see what happens. So that's what I've been playing. Maybe chipped away at or started a little bit of Shadow of Mordor again, but I know that Zeus has been playing that, so I want to maybe just ask him some impressions as we go as well. So that's been my time. Thanks for letting me ramble on, Prime, since it's been a while. So how about you? What have you been up to?
Yeah, so actually, before I get into mine, I just wanted to ask you a couple questions. So, The Division, the short film that they have on Amazon, is that live action or is it animated?
It's live action. Yep, actors. It plays out pretty well. I mean, it's shot well. It doesn't have to be, I don't know. It doesn't have to be acted incredibly well, because a lot of it is, some of it's a little cheesy, and it's okay that it's that way. There's not a whole lot of dialogue. It feels like it could be cut up into little commercials for The Division, and it would not be so out of place. So, for free on Amazon Prime, yeah, it's not so bad.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds good. That's actually a game that I had wasn't on my list of anticipated games, but it's definitely one I've had my eye on. Just kind of definitely want to kind of absorb everything that comes out, about the beta. And like you said, there is a public beta that's going to be coming up, so hopefully I'll be able to get into that one. I did try to get into this one, but I never got a code, so happens usually,
Yeah,
but.
so I did pre-order to get into the beta for sure. And I was really interested in The Division when it was first announced. And since that time, I've kind of just let it sit on a shelf, and I haven't really cared. And in some ways, I didn't get really excited for it until another CAG, World Voyager, brought it up about trying to play together. And I ended up playing a whole lot more than he did. But yeah, I wasn't really sure what to think of it or what to expect on it. It wasn't in my list of games that I was super excited about for this year, but I really enjoyed it, and I think there's a lot of potential to it. Other piece is, it's a Ubisoft game, so Best Buy, Amazon, within a month of it being released, they always tend to have a pretty deep discounted sale. So if it's not something that you're chomping at the bit to pick up, I know that it'll be heavily discounted after a short period of time.
Awesome.
Do you think that'll be the case with The Division, though? My question being, is that what happened with Destiny, with a big multiplayer game? I mean, I know there were deep discounts on Star Wars Battlefront and Rainbow Six Siege. I had the feeling that that was because of low uptake in the middle of the holiday season, and they had to move those units. So, I mean, given those assumptions and past performance, do you still think that this will be deeply discounted, like after 30 days?
Oh, that's a good question, Zeus. So Destiny in Black Friday and in between Thanksgiving and Christmas was discounted to $40 at multiple retailers during its first year. That in its initial launch, when even the content was relatively thin before the DLC came out, they had dropped it down. Now, the Division's coming out in a time when it's not the holiday shopping season, so maybe there's not the same amount of pressure to do that. But I think the other reality was that whether it's the drop-in, drop-out multiplayer, they really do some neat things on. So this is a tangent, sorry guys. But so as you're playing on the in the PvE world, that you can see where your friends are in the map. So, whether or not you're actually even in a game with a friend, you can see where they are on the map and join them. So it does make kind of drop in, drop out a little more enticing for people, potentially. But I bring that up because I think that whether it's the Dark Zone where a multiplayer population is going to be really important, or the way that they've integrated friends into the PvE aspect of the game, I think that it will benefit from more people playing it. And so I could see, it launches in the beginning of March. Maybe if it makes it past the 30-day mark, I could see where coming into summertime in the beginning of March, I mean of May, that it gets a discount. So, yeah, it's also, I mean, or it's Ubisoft and they just publish and produce way too many, and so eventually there's going to be a sale just to move units. So, yeah, as much as I would like to have this game digitally, because of the ease of access of jumping in and out, I know that I'm going to be able to get a much better price on it from a physical copy. So that's my thought, Zeus. Other questions, Prime?
No, I think that was it. I know it was a beta, so obviously there's probably gonna be like problems and stuff. But I mean, did you ever see any like major gameplay issues or anything like that, graphically, or just like I said, anything with the gameplay?
Graphically, it all looks pretty polished. Gameplay-wise, it was fine. Maybe there'd be some more balancing issues. I know after the alpha, I was talking to some guys just the other night that had played the alpha and the beta, and they definitely noticed some enemy damage tweaking done after the alpha. So maybe there's some more of that going on. The biggest thing that I noticed was trying to put together groups in the Dark Zone. We ended up getting kicked out a couple different times on the first night of the major, the first night of release. After that, it seemed relatively stable, but trying to get a group of four of us together created some problems, which I guess is what the beta is designed to do, is to hopefully iron those out so it would be up and running and good for Ubisoft, which is this is kind of a new endeavor for them, where they've done Rainbow Six was, kind of a small player server type of thing, where this has the potential to be a relatively big instance area. So yeah, relatively smooth. Nothing that I would be too worried about in terms of the overall build of the game, though.
All right, cool. Sounds good. I definitely have to. Hopefully, I'll be able to get into the next beta that comes out. So, all right. So for me, I've kind of been playing like my usual that I've been for the last few weeks, even months, really. So I'm kind of forego that and talk about an arcade visit that I actually had recently. It was my birthday at the end of the January last month. So there's a arcade called the Galloping Ghost that's near me in Brookfield, Illinois. And it opened, I believe, like 5, 6 years ago, and unfortunately, that was just when I was moving out of not of Brookfield, but I was like in a closer town, like maybe 10, 15 minutes away. So I actually never got to go to it, and I kind of moved a little further out. It takes maybe 45 minutes or so to get to it now, half hour maybe if I'm lucky, if it's like late or super early. But so yeah, my wife took me there for my birthday, and it's pretty cool. There's no tokens or little cards or anything like that. You just pay $15 up front, and then you have free rein to go into the arcade and just play whatever you want for as long as you want. You can even leave and come back as long as you keep your receipt. You can come back, just show me your receipt. As long as it's the same day, you're good. So we kind of did that. We played a little, went to have dinner, came back, start playing again. But this arcade, that it just had like pretty much everything I think I've ever played, and just tons of game I've never even heard of. So they had like beat 'em ups, shoot 'em, you know, shoot ups, shoot 'em ups, shmups, I think they call them, or bullet hell shooters. They had fighting games. I read pretty much all the fighting games. Some I've never even heard of. They've had, old, Galaga and, the old games, Pac-Man and Donkey Kong and everything like that. And it was just, a really cool experience. A really amazing place. Kind of small, which I guess was like the only negative that I kind of got away from it. It's just, everything's crammed together. I did put some pictures up on the casualadultgamers.com site, just kind of how, just of a few arcade cabinets and then like one of the aisles, and everything, every arcade game is just like one next to another. Like there's no space in between, anything. So it's pretty crammed in there. But it was just, I had that nostalgia feel, going to the arcade when I was a kid, and just, it's super loud when you go in there. It's been a while since I went to like a real arcade. I've been to like bowling alleys and stuff like that where they have, the little arcade room, but nothing like just nothing that just had like arcade cabinets everywhere, and it's just so loud. I don't know if it was always like that. Maybe just, just because I'm older, but you get used to it. And I played probably about four or five different fighting games, maybe, and I actually ran through the old Simpsons arcade game. Me and my wife, when we went through the whole thing, it took us, I don't even know how long, like a half hour maybe, just kind of going through the whole game. I think that's like the first arcade game I've ever beaten in my life, and obviously that's just because you got unlimited plays, so that's kind of nice. They had a an arcade a game called Kung Fu Master, which I believe was ported to the NES when it was just called Kung Fu, which I think I talked about during our 30th anniversary of the NES, like a month or two ago, whenever that was. I believe that was a port of that game. I think it was the same game. If not, it's pretty much dead on similar as far as gameplay, at least. Maybe the characters are a little different as far as like coloring and stuff like that. But yeah, it was fun. They had like a Pong game, like an original Pong, like arcade cabinet sitting there. I think I had a picture of that on the site. It was just really a really great experience, and definitely recommend if you ever in Brookfield, Illinois, go to Galloping Ghosts. So you'll have that nostalgia feel. But yeah, it was just a blast going there. And
That's super fun. Yeah,
yeah.
Kung Fu Master, you're right. It is, it's the black box Nintendo game by Irem or Irem. Yeah, that it plays out very much that same way. The sprites are obviously a little different, but the gameplay is the same. So that's super fun that you played The Simpsons this past summer when I was out in Salem, Massachusetts. My son and wife and I played through The Simpsons arcade game, although there we had to keep plugging quarters in, and so it wasn't unlimited play. So that's great. Any other rare kind of arcade games that stuck out to you?
I'm trying to think right now. It's man, they had so many things. There was actually a Sonic game that I had never seen before. I think it was called Sonic Heroes, maybe. I can't remember what it was. I think I had a picture of that too. I took a picture of that just because I'd never seen a Sonic game in an arcade before. So well, it was just kind of a it was like a trackball basically. You just kind of had to flip the trackball to run around and just do different stuff. I think there was like a jump button maybe, and that was about it. So, but that was like one I had never seen. There was actually two cabinets that were like all white, and it was almost like a kind of hologram-ish. And, obviously it was just kind of how they had it lined up, graphics on it. I think the one was called Coliseum, and then I can't remember what the other one was called, but I know I'd seen that one before. I just can't remember what it's called now. But unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to
Was
play
there
it. Just
Time Traveler or what was that? There was one of the. I'm trying to
Might
think
have
of that
been
old holographic game. Yeah. Cool.
it. Yeah, it
That's a
was just.
neat, nice way to spend your birthday.
Yeah, I just remember it because the cat, the cabinet's just it's like all white and with just the black like screen and background. So and it's kind of short. It's not like a full arcade cabinet. So I remember that just because it kind of stuck out, just because it was so different the way it looked. So yeah, it was cool though.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so I'm looking it up here as you're. It was called Holosseum, right? It's a white cabinet.
Yeah, there
And
was
then
that one,
the
but there was another one too that they had. It was, I think the picture, like the little demo that was showing, it was like kind of a cowboy. So that was a different
Yes.
one that they had too.
Yep, so that's the Time Traveler game. I remember that from a kid. So these are laser disc kind of full motion video games. early 90s that I remember them being, like most LaserDisc games, they're terrible because it's a reaction time or you don't really know what it's actually going to be. But it was, yes, I do remember the games that you're talking about. Yep, cool. That's neat.
Yeah, it was really cool. They had the original Street Fighter, which I had never even seen before, I don't think. I didn't get to play it, but I just saw it there. I had played Street Fighter 2, and then I think maybe one of the other ones. I can't remember what one of the other one was. I played Mortal Kombat, the original one, 2, and I think that was it for that one. There was War Gods, which I think was done by, I don't know if it was done by the Mortal Kombat guys, but maybe like their studio or something. That was like, I think, one of their first 3D games that they had created. So I had like this giant 3D button, which was basically you press that and you can like sidestep. So that was pretty terrible game actually when I was playing it. I was like, wow, this is really bad. I remember as a kid and I thought it was good, but now that I'm growing up, I was like, this is a pretty horrible game. But at least just because of the controls. But yeah, there was just so many games there, and just I think we were there for like a total of maybe 5 or 6 hours. Well, probably like 5 hours or so, kind of broken up. But there's definitely, you could spend a whole day just, coming and going, and just you probably still wouldn't play everything. So yeah, it was just a really cool time. So yep, that was it for me. So Zeus, if you wanna go through your list, or if you have any questions on either of ours.
Yeah, I'll start with you, Osiris. That arcade you went to, is, would you call that better or equal to like a Dave and Buster's?
Oh no, it was way better. There's no like ticket machines or anything like that. It's just all just pure arcade games, just like fighters and stuff like that. They did have a few like racing games that you actually sit down in, but other than that, it was just all just regular arcade cabinets just lined everywhere.
Okay, cool. And then I had a question for you, DBQ. Were any of the mobile, like the iOS stuff, content enabled in the beta? The whole ambitious game design of, they claimed that they were going to have like the game available on like iOS and like somebody on an iPad could like pilot a drone and be able to participate in game, or was this strictly console content?
I didn't see any of that. No, and it wasn't even like even in the menus, I didn't see where that could be. It was pretty much what it seemed like was really a test and a maybe a server load on the darkness zone or the dark zone for the multiplayer stuff. Because even the single player content was there was one story mission and a handful of or maybe two story missions and a handful of side quests, but like the big skill tree was really locked down, and so no, it was any of that kind of second screen stuff. It didn't even come up in the menus or in the prompts. So I wonder if that's still out there, or if it's something that, what, a year and a half ago, 2 years, almost two E3s now, when they announced this, if that was the hope and the pitch, but it kind of falls to the wayside like some of the Watch Dogs stuff did too.
I think they actually took that out, if I'm not mistaken. I was listening to it was one of the IGN podcasts, and they were talking about that, and they had said that they had taken it out. So I'm not, but I don't know. Sometimes they're wrong too on those podcasts, so who knows? But for now, as far as I know, I think they had taken that out. So.
Okay, and then DB, did you have any opportunity to, I mean, was there any kind of matchmaking in the game? Like, could you link up with friends, and were you able to try that? And if that wasn't there, is it straightforward lobby like, come in with your party that you're already in, or was it kind of similar to this trend that I've been noticing of like being like ridiculously confusing and a complete pain to get through it the first time?
So the matchmaking was two different ways. So kind of informal matchmaking with friends in the game, that was really easy and straightforward, where you could see somebody on, you could see a friend on your map and join them. You could, if you were walking up next to somebody, you could click in and give them an invite. And that was an easy way to join up with them. If you were clicking in and giving somebody in the same instance, it happened really kind of seamlessly. If it was a friend, you end up kind of going to a loading screen and jumping into their instance. And so it wasn't really super seamless, but it wasn't funky. The matchmaking stuff ends up sitting at it's a station in your base that you can go and choose a mission and do matchmaking. And I looked through the menus there. I didn't actually play the matchmaking aspect of it. So, but it the fact that it's built in means that it'll if you need to tackle some a mission or a boss or something, that it's not going to end up being like Destiny, where you've got to go to a LFG site to be able to group up with somebody. So in theory, hopefully having it built in means that it's integrated pretty well. But there's a lot of loading screens as you're jumping in and out of one person's game or another. It then kicks you back to your own instance afterward. So it's not super smooth, but it was stable.
Okay, and my last question is, and was any of the content PvP, or was this all against like in-game AI?
Oh yeah, no, a lot of it was PvP, or at least the potential of it, right? The way that it plays out is in the Dark Zone, which is the PvP area. You can get loot from enemy AI, and then, or you can, as they say, go rogue and start shooting at other players. So the PvP stuff ends up being kind of more emergent gameplay than any type of like deathmatch timed type of thing. It really becomes almost like DayZ-esque, where you're all existing in the same world, and it's just a matter of the players that you're playing with if they decide to turn on you or gang up on you. Or when I was playing with one other player, so it was just the two of us on the map, we had a group that was kind of hunting us, a group of three players that were marked on our map that had killed us once, had gone rogue and killed us, and so we could kind of continue to see them on the map. So eventually we kept kind of moving around the map and trying to avoid them. We never really went back to try to take them out, but it became kind of a little bit of cat and mouse as we were trying to get loot from enemy AI and also stay a couple blocks ahead of them and keep moving. So it added a neat kind of additional layer of gameplay to it. So, which was neat. It was fun.
Okay, very cool. So for my playlist, the past week or so, I started off playing Middle Earth: Shadow of Mordor. Finally, this is a game that I've had on my PS4 for some number of months, and just never got around to breaking it out. I only have three games on disc for my PS4, and that's Infamous Second Son, Destiny, and Shadow of Mordor. And every time I went to play a disc-based game. Which I haven't in a while, but every time I reached for the stack of discs, I always wound up grabbing Destiny. So I finally got around to playing this. It is pretty neat. I kind of like the rivalry system with the orc captains. There's a couple design problems that I have with it, mainly the waypoint and targeting system of who you're supposed to be going after. It's like it seemed to me like even when you went into like the Sauron's army screen and selected an orc captain to target, then you still at some point had to come out to the map to see where they were on the map and make sure that you set a waypoint on them. But the larger problem I had is at least in the section that I'm in, there's always two objective waypoints that show in your game screen when you're in third person view. They're frequently like in the opposite directions, and neither one is differentiated in that view as to which one is your target. So basically, it seemed to me like you have to select an orc captain as your target, then go to the map to drop a waypoint on his location. Then when you get back in your in-game view, you may see two objective points on your HUD. And then you have to go back into the map to look at which way you're facing in comparison to those two points to understand which one is your target. And then if you get involved in combat, right, and you start running around in like 360 degrees, then you have to do the same thing. You have to go back in the map, look at how you're oriented in relation to that target point, and then go back into your in-game view and make sure you're heading in the direction of the target. Overall, though, I found the game pretty enjoyable. I like the fact that stealth actually works in this game. I tend to not play a lot of stealth-oriented games because I despise that millimeter of space that exists between like when you're still sneaking up on a target, and if you go that 1 millimeter too far, all of a sudden they discover you. But stealth works pretty good in this game. I do dislike, again, this is at the outset when you initially get the bow, when you go into Wraith form. I do dislike how you only, I think my carrying capacity right now is like 3 arrows. And then you're supposed to find arrows along the way, which just don't show up as like a really bright, shiny object. Like the only way that I know that I'm on top of an arrow is when I see the dialogue pop up on the screen that says, you know, hit button whatever to collect arrows. So, but overall it was pretty neat. I find fighting bosses really enjoyable. It's a hair short of being a beat 'em up because you can effectively combat like 5 to 8 enemies. I went into a stronghold at one point and allowed somebody to set off an alarm, and then you just get swarmed by like 30-something orcs. And I was actually able to effectively fight them in small groups, and then get to a point where I could make an escape by leaping off a cliff, running across a riverbed ravine, and then climbing up a ladder on the other side. So it was pretty cool. Not perfect. I guess I felt a little surprised playing the game that I think it was one of like the highest rated PS4 games of 2015. I think on some sites I think it was the number one game. It was game of the year in a few places, so I found that surprising. Maybe there's more to it, but as a standard third person action adventure game, I thought it was pretty decent. I definitely find Just Cause 3 much more interesting. Which you know, in that game didn't get as highly acclaimed in critical reviews, but overall it wasn't bad. I'm glad I started playing it, but I didn't necessarily have a gamer's remorse about the fact that I didn't play it when it was kind of in the zeitgeist. And then more interesting.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah, so I picked up the game last summer, ended up reselling it, and picked it up over the holidays again for like $10. And so I've just started chipping away at it. It's one of those where I remember it was raved by all kinds of outlets. But I'm having a hard time kind of wanting to stay in that world, right? Like, the combat is fun. It's kind of Batman-like. The stealth, you're right, it works better than Assassin's Creed in a lot of ways. What's keeping you in it, Zeus? Because right now, I haven't been pulled enough in to keep coming back.
Yeah, well, as I think you guys know by my gaming pattern, I pretty much don't stick with anything. So there's nothing really keeping me in it, but that doesn't make it any different than any other game in my backlog. I will say, I guess the only thing that kind of pulls me in and takes me off my pattern or my routine is kind of a thick, meaty racing game. You know, I'll stick on those for a couple of days more than I might otherwise normally for my schedule, but it's fine. It's not anything that like super excites me. It's like 25 hours. What I've seen on gamelengths.com is that it's 25 to 32 hours ish to get through the main single player campaign, and then it has additional side missions. So, you know, it's one of those, I don't know that I'll ever complete it, because I don't know if I'm going to invest 25 hours in it, but, it's a fine thing to have in my collection and come back to from time to time. I probably played maybe 3 hours of it at this first sitting before I rolled on to something different.
Cool. Well, I'll have to dive back in it and give it another try. So what else have you been playing?
So probably the thing that did that caught my interest a bit more was Dragon's Dogma: Dark Arisen. Mainly because it's actually a fairly recent game. It came out on January 15th on PC. Now, even though it released on PC in mid-January, the truth is it's actually an older game that I guess released on the 360, I think, like back in 2012. And this Dark Arisen is a it's labeled as a sequel, but what it really is it's really the original game plus all of the DLC, plus some original new maps and missions. So for what it is, I was actually kind of impressed that this came out on the 360 and completely, bypassed my radar. But it's very similar, in fact, to Shadow of Mordor in that it's a third-person action. It's kind of interesting that, Shadow of Mordor, I think, gets more commonly referred to as an action-adventure game. Dragon's Dogma is an action RPG. My only thing with Dragon's Dogma, it's a little confusing and maze-like with regards to managing your inventory. Strangely enough, for some reason, it has both an inventory screen and an equipment screen, and I didn't really understand the point of that. It took me a while. I got bogged down a little bit trying to figure out how to equip my bow, because I was expecting the standard action RPG paradigm, which is, if you equip your bow, you can't concurrently equip a hand-to-hand weapon, and kind of admittedly the genre-specific stupidity of, when you have a bow and somebody gets in close to you, you don't hit them with the bow, you just shoot them at like point-blank range, which is a standard action RPG trope, which I hate. But in this one, I have dual-wielding daggers equipped due to the class that I selected, and then you click the Q key and it puts you in bow mode, which just means you still run around with your daggers out, but when you hit your light attack button, your character switches to the bow, which I thought was a pretty neat way of dealing with it. And again, similar to the mechanic in Shadow of Mordor, except you're not limited to like three arrows at a time. So it's got a pretty interesting story behind it. It's very bogged down in the beginning. There's tutorial dialogues like all over, like every 30 seconds, you're getting a new pop-up thing that says, we'll pick up this, pick up herbs to like restore your health. And I was like, I captured about an hour of this, and there's a point where I was like, just great, Scott, stop with the tutorials. It's also interesting how it scaled enemies very quickly. In the first opening sequences, when you get out of the infirmary, after the dragon attacks in the opening sequence, I picked up like my first like companion, which they call pawns, and they just kind of appear out of portals. But I grabbed that guy and set out on the road from the town we were in and headed towards an encampment. And along the way, we encounter like two goblins. Now, goblins in this game are very like short and kind of small, and obviously easy to take out. But we encountered like three of them. You go to the encampment, and you get your first kind of real mission, and it tells you to like eliminate any monsters wandering outside the encampment, and you'll gain like a legion of followers to select from. So I headed back out the gate. I turn the corner. It's like this 15-foot tall like troll. One-eyed troll that you then have to fight, and I'm like, wow, that, from two to three like little tiny goblins to this huge like cyclops like beast. But the other neat mechanic in this game is with larger creatures like that, you can actually run up to them and jump, and you hit your F key and you actually grab onto them, and then can kind of hack and slash at them with your melee weapon. While they're kind of running around trying to buck you off, so that was pretty interesting. And in this particular mission, your pawn like does something to like hit the thing in the eyes to kind of set it off balance, and then you're supposed to jump on and like hack at its feet, and then it completely loses its balance and topples over, and you're able to then score some additional like big major damage. Level ups are pretty quick with additional like melee techniques and stuff that you can utilize. Not as quick and pretty as Shadow of Mordor, but still pretty quick. And so, yeah. And the only other thing that's a little confusing and bothersome was there's tutorial dialogues that pop up while you're in the first town that talk about, you know, go to the armorer or the weaponeer or whatever and get better equipment. But, like, none of the shops have any kind of, like, sign on them or anything. So, like, the only way you know that you're going into a grocery is because there's, like, fruits and vegetables outside. But I saw no signs of, like, a blacksmith or a weaponeer or a sword or anything like that. So, I just got tired of it and struck out on the road with what I had. But, yeah, in that first hour of the hour that I captured, which was really, like, the after the I'd played 30 minutes already, not recording, but that next hour, I probably spent like 30 minutes just kind of running around and trying to figure stuff out. And at a certain point was just like, okay, I really just want to get into combat at this point. So it's a slow burn at the start. I'm hoping that it picks up, as I continue the game.
So I was just going to say, so the gameplay wise, is it like a faster pace, like Shadow Mordor? Or is it kind of like, I don't know if you ever played Dragon Age Inquisition, or maybe even, well, not really the first Dragon Age. I say Inquisition, I guess. Is it more like that kind of slower kind of attacking?
It's pretty quick. It's tough. Are you just talking about in terms of the combat, like, mechanics?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the same. You know, Shadow of Mordor, I guess I would say Dragon Age Inquisition is a little slower, I felt, in terms of the kinematics in comparison to Shadow of Mordor, and Dragon's Dogma is probably somewhere in between the two.
Okay, cool. DB, did you have a question?
No, I remember people talking about it, and it's by Capcom, right? So it ends up being, I was thinking of when you were talking about all those menus, there's a little bit of Monster Hunter in there as well, but it always seemed more approachable. So, yeah, it's a 360 game and a PlayStation 3 game, and I remember playing a little bit of it on PlayStation 3. So I'm glad you got into it.
Yeah, there's definitely some, like, kind of Resident Evil-like, like, menu design and whatnot, like other Capcom games. I will say it is the most Western Capcom game that I've ever played, so I was really surprised. I don't think I realized it was Capcom when I bought it, and then I was surprised when I realized it was a Capcom game. So you guys want to head over and talk a little bit of news, or do we want to go to the main topic?
Yeah, we can go ahead with the news if you want to go ahead and start it off.
Yeah, I'll get through these pretty quick because I'm hoping we have some time left to make the main topic onto the docket. So, real quick, this one is kind of not news. I was really kind of surprised that Game Insider reported on this, but they claim that Capcom is in talks of revisiting the Onimusha series. The truth of the matter is that it's just the original creator of Onimusha, Yoshinori Ono, who... you know, basically he says, you know, while walking around the halls at work, like, I've run into people who were with me on the original team, and we've briefly commented on going back to the series. So I didn't really feel like his comments constituted Capcom, the company, or the business actively engaged in a conversation about revisiting Onimusha. It felt very much more like, you know, people at the water cooler going, hey, you know, wouldn't it be cool to go back to that game? Oh, yeah, and we could do this, you know, the thing we always talked about. But I didn't really get the sense from his comments that it was really, like, serious discussion. So, slightly sketchy presentation and titling by Game Insider. But did either one of you play this game on the PlayStation 2 and kind of have a yearning for going back to it?
I think I rented it. I rented one of them. I can't remember which one. And yeah, it was decent. I liked the gameplay and everything. It was pretty cool. I'd definitely probably check it out if they brought out a new one. I'm sure it would look gorgeous at the very least, but yeah, it was pretty good game when I had played it, that, like I said, I think just like that one time, maybe for a few days. DB, how about you? No, I think we might have, oh, there
so
it
this is the yeah so is this the like kind of Dragon Dynasty Warriors-esque vampire? Isn't there have been other Onimusha ones, or am I thinking of a totally different game?
There's been, like, four in the entire series. I don't know that all of them made it to U.S. releases. I think the first two did, maybe three. The third one may have been a PlayStation 3 game. I'm not absolutely certain, but to me, the game was always more like Resident Evil set in ancient Japan times. It had that kind of thing of like old Resident Evil games did, where like you would, if you ran to the edge of the screen, then like it would snap you like to the next part of the room or something like that. But yeah, it was pretty popular on the PS2 because I think it was, I mean, it was either a launch window game or very shortly after the launch window. It was one of the first PlayStation 2 games that I played. And again, it wasn't my kind of style of game, but I definitely spent a long time finding it pretty, surprisingly to me, pretty interesting.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it had, I remember at the time it was kind of a graphical showpiece when it first came out, and so that's kind of neat.
Yeah, and then the only other thing I wanted to talk about was the Trek Minio Turbo release date trailer. Did either one of you guys see this?
I actually just watched it before we started recording.
Yeah, pretty insane stuff, what don't you think?
Oh yeah, it's kind of interesting now. You know, the graphics are amazing actually. Almost, you know, I wouldn't say like Forza or you know, any kind of simulation game, but they're actually pretty incredible. And just to kind of see that kind of style in this kind of gameplay, almost kind of, you know, not almost, but kind of arcadey gameplay, it's just pretty amazing.
Yeah, for anyone who's never played a Trackmania game, this is a weird. It seems like a departure from the series. So, the things you see in the video are it's very much a physics. It's a physics car racing game, and I use the term physics loosely. It defies reality, but it's still kind of physics based, and it has a lot of these kind of mechanisms in the game, which they showcase in the trailer. Things that I'm familiar with, like racing up a vertical wall, making a right-hand turn and heading in a different direction, and then kind of leaping from that vertical wall to another portion of the track, and your car will like spin and rotate, and you have to stick the landing to continue accelerating forward on the prescribed next vector on the track. So there was that. There was a section, I think they showed it in the video, where you lose all throttle. So you have to enter that section at like top speed, and usually those sections are designed so that you barely get to the end with sufficient momentum, you know, to make the final jump. So it's all kinds of crazy stuff like that. In Trackmania, tracks are typically unpredictable. You normally have to just run the track a couple times to even figure out where the thing goes. What is surprising to this about this to me is that what was number one, it's historically been a PC game. This version is coming to the PS4 and the Xbox One. It is also typically an exclusively time trial game, so it's just a matter of going in and setting your best time. And the only other cars on the track typically are ghosts, which are intangible. You can't crash into them. But clearly, what was shown in the trailer was, you know, a 16 to 24 pack car race with collisions in the same kind of crazy, insane physics-based playground that the Trackmania tracks have normally been in. So that to me is pretty exciting, the notion of playing those kind of tracks in multiplayer with human rivals. So I'm looking really forward to that game. I think it comes out the end of March, I think. I'm not positive, but I found that pretty interesting. So I'm fine. Go ahead and run down yours, Prime, unless anybody had any questions about Trackmania.
No, yeah, it actually looks pretty cool. I never played any of the older ones, so I couldn't, you know, compare it with anything. But yeah, I mean, visually, it just looks very interesting. Like I said, just the tracks are, like at that one point, I remember it was like the track kind of went up and then off to the right. So it's interesting how you would actually take that and, you know, kind of keep on going. So that was pretty cool. So yeah, I had a DB, you gonna say something?
Oh, yeah, no, I was just gonna. So I played Trackmania forever back in the late 2000s, right? And then they did all their Trackmania Planet stuff, where. So is this, Zeus, is this a way to bring people back under one banner of Trackmania after they kind of divided up the audience? Or is it, because of the gameplay that you're describing, is it a whole separate piece and beast because of its, bringing something different.
Looks like he had to step away actually for a minute. So if you want to just hold that question, and then when he comes back, we can ask him.
Sure, and let's just keep moving on with other news.
Right, I'll go ahead and start off next. I'll jump in. I got a few things, a few Nintendo items that I'm going to go through, and then but the first one is some Destiny news or an email that actually I guess went out to registered users, as it's saying, because I didn't re receive this, even though I'm a registered user, but I haven't played in, wow, a long time now, probably like 5 to 6 months. Basically, it was just asking, how is Destiny going for you? I think it was just really the one question. How would you rate the most recent experience in Destiny? And it just gave like a one through five, five being or one being not fun and five being very fun. So I just thought that was kind of interesting that they're kind of going out there and seeing how the community's doing, how they're reacting to the game currently. They haven't once the Taken King hit, dropped. I don't there really hasn't been any other update, like major updates or anything like that. So and I believe they are saying there's not going to be anything major all this year, and supposedly, and I'm saying this in air quotes, Destiny 2 is not going to even come out this year. So I just thought that was kind of interesting, and kind of what your thoughts were, since I think both of you were still playing or had been playing recently.
Yeah, so I did get back into Destiny, and it part of the chatter around the lull in content got me back in. Actually, this past weekend I took on some of the Kingsfall raid, the Taken King raid for the first time ever. Yeah, so IGN, their Fireteam podcast, also did a Twitter poll and. In terms of looking at how people are satisfied, there's been a lot of bits and pieces updates within the PvP gameplay scene. There's the doubles skirmish mode that's coming out this week. At the end of 2015, there was a sparrow racing, but there really hasn't been any type of PvE content in terms of other than a couple challenge modes in the raid. So yeah, I think it's an interesting piece for them to get out there and see what their audience is seeing. And I wonder, in some ways, the fact that last year Destiny had this kind of World of Warcraft place in the gaming pantheon of something that people sunk so much time into, really just kind of rerunning and rerunning the content because they were there to grind the loop. And so maybe that loop is not there, but I don't know that when another big content drop comes out, even if it's an expansion pack this fall, because Kotaku had you're right, Prime, Kotaku had posted that there's the potential for the full Destiny 2 to be delayed. I would think that the fan base is still interested enough to come back. It may be even a healthier fan base if it's not so obsessive, and that people are playing a little bit of other things in the process of just playing Destiny. But at the same time, I got on with some friends last night on Destiny and played through the Nightfalls. Didn't get anything super fancy, but one of the friends who still plays was saying, I'd become a collector of bits and pieces because there's not much else to do, but I still love the gameplay, right? For all my conversation about how interesting the Division is, the gameplay is the gunplay is still a little squishy, where Destiny's gunplay is still some really good Bungie gunplay. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, with Bungie a couple weeks ago, I'm sure you guys talked about the change in the leadership positions there. I think there's a lot of questions about what's going on and what's going to be happening. They've changed the name of the weekly update to just be Bungie News or something like that. So they really have kind of started to dial back in terms of how much they're engaging. So, but I don't know if that's bad. It may be more sustainable in the long run. So, yeah, It'll be interesting, but I think that the community, for as fanatical as they were, being able to sustain that for any publisher is a challenge.
Yeah, it's pretty
I'm
hard.
still
Oh, go ahead.
I'm still confused by like the business strategy and the messaging behind the notion of a Destiny 2. I thought the whole point of the thing was that it would just exist and they would just add to it. So when they say Destiny 2, I mean is the intention to charge us another $60 to get, an expansion pack? Or are these going to be completely disparate games? Or are people still going to be playing on Destiny servers, and then are there going to be Destiny 2 servers? Like I don't get it. As is the case with a lot of the things that Bungie has done with this game.
So from what the speculation is, right? So I continue to listen to Planet Destiny and IGN's Destiny podcast, and even when I kind of stepped away from the game, I was still kind of engaged in the community. That I think the big speculation is that a Destiny 2 is hopefully is something similar to what the original Destiny was in terms of content. That it is not just another big expansion pack like the Taken King was, is the most kind of consistent speculation about it is that it Destiny 2 will move it off last gen systems, so it'll only be PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, which should also then allow it to be, maybe a little more consistent. Maybe that they're not devoting resources to four different platforms, and so I think that it would probably be an updated version of that engine, and it would be able to carry your character over. This fall, the other pieces around the speculation around Destiny 2 was that after that, because I think you're right. Zeus, the big question still is kind of the monetary aspect of it, and how they're making their money, and whether or not their little microtransactions are enough to keep it going, or if it becomes kind of a full-on subscription-based type of thing afterwards. So I'm gonna guess that between the changeover in the leadership position and the fact that they've been relatively quiet on it, is that they're still trying to figure out exactly how they make this sustainable and financially viable as well.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I have heard, I guess. Rumor mill. There hasn't been anything substantial, obviously nothing official, but hopefully maybe E3 will hear something at least about, what it actually is going to be, if it's like a full-on release or if it's, just tacked on. But I totally forgot that they had released it on the last generation, 360 and PS3. So I would think, yeah, probably, they'll try to relaunch it, if you want to call it like that, and just have a totally new game come out, and so they can just kind of almost start over and kind of maybe build on that game. Maybe after that they'll just add on, like Taken Kings and Dark Below and stuff like that, instead of releasing a new a new game every few years, or who knows, I guess. Of course, this is, they are, I shouldn't say owned by Activision, but they are partnering with Activision, so I'm sure they want, iterations coming out every few years at least. So, it'll be interesting to see how that's going to play out. All right, so next few items real quick. Some Nintendo news. The last DLC content for Super Smash Bros. Actually came out on February 3rd, which included Bayonetta and Corrin or Corinne. I'm not sure. Not sure where she's from. Do you guys
Corrin.
know?
Corrin's from the new Fire Emblem game, the 3DS Fire Emblem Birthright, which is coming out later this month. So,
Okay, yeah. That's, I was thinking it was Fire Emblem, and then I wasn't sure if it was like maybe Xenoblade or something like that. Just kind of the way she looked. But yeah, that came out along with new stage, the Umbra Clock Tower, which I believe is a Bayonetta thing, and then some Mii fighter costumes that you can get. So that's supposedly the last piece of DLC. Although I thought I saw a report that one of the, I don't know if it was the producers or creators or whoever of the game was kind of hinting that more stuff might be coming, coming eventually, or something's going to be coming down the line, maybe, possibly.
So, Prime, do you know, so is that content available for the 3DS version also? And is it free or is it paid?
I believe that is free, and it is for both Wii U and 3DS. I know that the other contents were paid, at least as far as the characters. I think they did release a few free stages, possibly, and maybe some costumes for the Mii.
There's a few free stages, but the most of the characters and the main kind of game-based stages are all paid, right? And so my sons and I picked up Cloud last month as DLC and looked at buying Bayonetta and Corrin just this past weekend, actually. Corrin is, I think, $5 for and to get a code. What ends up being is you download it on the Wii U and you get a code for the 3DS and you can play it in both. You can buy it in just one system or the other, or for an extra dollar, I think you get it for both. And the third party characters like Cloud or Ryu or Bayonetta are an extra dollar above and beyond the Nintendo licensed one. So whether that's simply just an additional licensing fee or but and so I think they're $6 is what their base is. But you can actually end up buying all the characters for like 40 some dollars on both systems or $40. I mean it's they've bundled it together to the point where buying all the DLC ends up costing just as much as probably what it would be to buy the game again. So I think that's potentially where some of those rumors of like a gold edition or collector's edition that bundles that all together might be coming from.
Cool. So I didn't realize. I thought they were both coming in like a pack. So I didn't realize they were just kind of each you bought them each individually. So that's interesting. All right. So for my next piece news item that I found here is kind of a fun little article that I found, just kind of going over the most popular amiibos by region for last year for 2015. So I'll just run through like the first few of them here for each kind of territory. So for Japan, I'll just do like the first three. First one is girl, which is the Splatoon girl. Squid, and then boy, which is the Splatoon boy. North America, we got Link, Bowser, and then Toon Link for number three. And then finally Europe, we got Classic Mario, which I believe is the like the pixelated one. That actually I've seen that out in the stores. I think actually just at Best Buy. I don't know if that's an exclusive or not here for Best Buy, but I always thought that was kind of a cool looking one. Number two, Link, and then number three, Squid, which is I believe is just the Splatoon Squid character. So I just thought that was kind of cool, neat little interesting thing, just to kind of see how which characters are most popular in the different category or like the different territories. So I don't know. I guess I was kind of surprised with Link at number one, but I don't know. I guess they did that by sales, I'm assuming, is how they figured that out. Trying to look right now.
Yeah, and Link has been relatively, I mean, consistently available the entire time as the different waves has kind of come in and out, or if they have republished people like Little Mac and Marth, that Link has always been there, so potentially that's been a piece of it. I think the Squid and Inklings are interesting in the Japanese market because it really shows how it has the potential to really show how much Splatoon has caught on in the Japanese market, which I think is a good sign for Nintendo in terms of that it's a new IP. They kind of branched out and did something a little bit different, and it's been a success for them. So hopefully that is encouraging them to continue to think about different ways to not just recycle their 30-year-old characters and come up with some more new IPs.
Yeah, they were pretty popular in Japan and Europe. They weren't in the top 10 at all for North America, any of the Splatoon characters. A lot of the latter half of the North American list was actually a lot of third party, so like Sonic and Mario and Mega Man, so it's kind of interesting. So yeah, so then the last piece of news that I had here for Nintendo was they announced their they had an investor meeting. I think it was last month, or not last month, last week. Let me see here. I believe that was last week, and they were talking about their new My Nintendo program, which is replacing their Club Nintendo program. Which, if you didn't know, when you bought like a D or a 3DS, maybe DS, I think it was started with the 3DS, or any of the like the Wii and Wii U games, they had a code on them that you can go onto Club Nintendo, redeem the code, and you get however many points, and then you can buy like just kind of swag type stuff, like different styluses or cases or T-shirts and posters and stuff like that. And then kind of the latter half of the program, they started doing actually games that you can or download games at least that you can redeem your points for. So this one kind of sounds pretty much like the same thing. That says that points are accumulated through the game console and smart devices. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. If it's going to be just like if you buy, one of their mobile games, you'll get so many points, or if there's going to be some other way that you'll be able to accumulate these points. And then kind of like they had in the old one, there's a gold and a platinum category. I think it was, I'm trying to remember, after a certain amount of points, you were gold, your gold status, and then you hit platinum with like, I don't know, eight, 600 to 800, 900 points, you were platinum, and you can get like something super special. And then along with, obviously you can buy stuff, but there'll be discounts for, I'm assuming, games or and or systems or possibly amiibos. We'll see if they actually try to discount those for the same thing. So excuse me, I just thought that was kind of interesting that they're finally bringing this back. I thought this was actually supposed to be in place by now, but I think they delayed it probably because of their mobile strategy, since they only have, I think, just the one game right now on the mobile devices is that Pokemon, like the match game. So, and just the only other thing they really talked about was the one game that they had announced was Miitomo back in October. So that's supposed to be coming out in March of this year, supposedly. So we'll see if that happens, and maybe that'll kind of kick off the program if, when you go to buy that. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know if you guys ever did the Club Nintendo at all.
So Club Nintendo did start back with the DS. I remember signing up for it way back with buying my first DS Lite, even, or shortly thereafter. Yes, so I was very comfortable buying DS games and flipping them, but stripping out the Club Nintendo points. So yeah, I'm a little familiar with it in terms of gaming the system. But it'll be interesting to see what this new, the end of March is the end of Nintendo's fiscal year, and so they've really got some investor pressure to get Miitomo out, this kind of social app, almost more of a social app than it sounds like a game. So it'll be, I think, within the next month we should have some idea whether or not it's even translated out into the West yet, or if it stays out in Japan. Will be interesting.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see, if they're, what kind of stuff that they actually have too. That what was like the most interesting thing you ever got from there, from the Club Nintendo program?
Most interesting thing, right? So they had some really cool things, right? They had like Game and Watch collections for the DS. You could get a gold nunchuck to go along with your Skyward Sword gold Wiimote. Most of what I ended up getting were posters, right? So I've got a handful of different posters that are up in my kids' rooms in terms of a different, like, Zelda 30th anniversary or pixelated Luigi poster. I think the most practical things I ever got out of there were like DS game cartridge cases, travel cases, things like that. Bits and pieces, just little tchotchkes. Never really worth the price of admissions. But for people who followed it, there was always Europe and Japan always got a whole lot more in terms of both selection and kind of quality. And so on the North America side, we always kind of got just the short shift. But it was a neat little Nintendo fandom type of thing. So I think the best thing about this new release is, even if it comes back and is relatively similar, the fact that it's stretched across all their platforms and is using the DNA acquisition infrastructure and partnership to make it more seamless means that it's not this kind of clunky paper code that you have to then type in and fill out a survey for, and it is a little more modern in its implementation.
Yes, Nintendo does love their codes, as we all know from their friend codes and all that. So, yeah, hopefully, they kind of evolve it and do something different. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see, especially on the smart devices, how you accumulate stuff. Is if it's like, maybe they'll do something with where it's actually, you're getting like achievements or whatever they might call it, and then you can actually use those points to, to buy stuff like that. So, which I believe. The Xbox I actually talked about, I think, at one point, but they've never done anything with it, so just kind of have a game of score sitting there for bragging rights, basically. So maybe they'll kind of adopt that and evolve it. So we'll see. Azus, did you ever do any Club Nintendo stuff?
If I did, I wouldn't have realized that that's what I was doing, because I've just always found like Nintendo's whole approach and the platform to be very confusing. So, I'm sure with my 3DS XL, I got some kind of code, and I'm sure I joined something, and maybe I got something out of it, like maybe some wallpaper or some themes or whatever for my Nintendo 3DS, but I was never consciously aware of there being like other stuff available.
Yeah, I actually kind of got on it kind of late, so I never really I got anything too great. Like near the end, they had kind of had some cool things. I got like a Zelda, I think it was a Majora's Mask for when that was being re-released, like a book bag, not a book bag, but like a, can't remember what they call those, but kind of like a bag. Nothing super fancy, I thought it kind of looked cooler on the picture, obviously, than when I got it, but it's still kind of, it's pretty cool. It's got a nice design on it and everything. And I got the same thing like DB. I got the cases for the 3DS, a travel case, and I think one of the first things I got was like a thing of stylus or styli, however you want to say it. So, it was cool. It's kind of cool. But yeah, you're right, DB, that Europe and Japan always got kind of the cooler things. So, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. DB, did you have anything as far as news?
No, I feel like we've kind of, I mean, it's also a slow time of year, so we're kind of hitting bits and pieces here. So I don't have anything else. If we want to cover the last bits you have, or we run in a little bit long, if we want to save our topic of the week for another week, that's fine too.
Okay, yeah, sounds good. Yeah, I think we'll just wait until the next show to go over our topic. We're kind of I wanted to expand on a couple episodes ago when we were talking about our streaming, how we do it, and what we think of the services and all that. I kind of wanted to go over that a little bit more detail. It was just kind of me and Zeus kind of talk about it kind of at the end of the show. So I just want to expand on that. So we'll do that. We'll wait. Next week, hopefully we'll have a full crew and we can have everybody chime in on it. I think everybody here is streaming. I know Zeus does. I do a little bit. I have, or it has been a while. DB, I don't know if you, I know you. I think you're starting. You're thinking of starting streaming yet. So hopefully we'll talk about that next week. So that brings us to the end of another episode of Band of Gamers. If you have any comments about this week's episode, last week's episode, anything, or if you have any suggestions, please visit the website at bandofgamers.net, or you can also send us an email at podcast@bandofgamers.net. If you want to follow us on any of the streaming or anything like that, you can follow DBQ Hams at Twitch at the same handle, DBQ Hams. You can follow me on YouTube at TileMaster99, and at Twitch it's actually different. It's Osiris_Prime. You can follow Zeus on his YouTube channel on Rounding Off Infinity, And then Gray, I'll give him a plug, even though he's not here. The Gamer Show, and that's the underscore gamers underscore show on Twitch and at YouTube. So on behalf of myself, Osiris Prime, I want to thank DB and Zeus, and we will see you next time.